Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 22nd of November, recording at 9:23 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is also the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, let's have a quick look at what's happened here on the week. Well, Wall Street's been very steady. Actually, it's been more than steady. It's continued to climb. Very few other markets are matching that. Those that have matched it among major stock markets, I should say, would be Japan, which has the same overall percentage gain of the S&P right now, the Nikkei does. 26.74 for the Nikkei and 26.54 for the S&P to date. The other markets that are matching or even exceeding Wall Street tend to be some fringe markets, some of the African resources producers markets, although not South Africa, and also some of the untroubled, comparatively speaking, Middle Eastern markets. They also remain very steady. Most of these are late in the cycle movers, as you know, and so I feel that they are evidence that we are in a very mature phase of this overall bull market cycle. Now, what else is taking place? Long-dated government bond yields, they've been relatively steady here recently. So we haven't had any additional upward push in the 10-year treasuries that I keep talking about. I think that yield is at 2.7, around just below 2.75. And I've mentioned the break above 2.8 as an amber warning signal, and more importantly, a break above 3% would certainly start to become a headwind for Wall Street and indeed other stock markets. In fact, I think that Wall Street's strength against the background of this QE, and let's not mince words here, this is the most accommodative market, the most accommodative monetary policy that I have ever seen, or that any of us have ever seen. And it continues. And we have an accommodative monetary policy in Japan and also in Europe, although they're slightly different. Now, but the concern, I think, over what might happen particularly regarding Wall Street's QE, quantitative easing, and possible tapering of that, I think has effects that go way beyond Wall Street. And some of the, for instance, the ASEAN markets have been concerned about that for quite some time, having peaked in May. Now, what looks cheap in here? Some of the autonomies are still cheap, not least within the resources sector, the oil shares that I reviewed yesterday. Japan is, I'm told, is at about half the book value of Wall Street, and that looks attractive, and it's in the latter stages of a extensive multi-month reaction and consolidation phase, which is the first step above the base. And once you get a breakout of the first step, break above the first step above the base, you tend to get another very, very good move as veteran subscribers and students of the our chart seminar will be well aware. Okay, now in terms of currencies, the yen is soft. That's good for Japan as well. Looking at the commodities, they have stopped Well, they've steadied here overall. The CCI index, that's that continuous commodity index that I often mention, that's ranging right now, having had a small upward dynamic earlier in the week. And we've seen oil prices check their declines recently. Natural gas is quite firm now. The prices, you know, has been awfully low for a long time, at least the price in the USA, but it has firmed in the US, and I can actually quote that to you. It's at 3.78. Again, still cheap internationally, but higher than it has been for a while in the US, and that's due to the cold weather that has moved in there. And other themes here, precious metals. The bold facts here are that they are in overall downward trends, and they are challenging the support that they had seen or established earlier in the year. And so this is a make-or-break point here, and there are a lot of people talking them down, and notably Goldman Sachs, which remains bearish of the sector. My own feeling here is that I would be quite cautious, and I've said this before, and these I would be quite cautious now, and actually not having a position in gold right now, I have a vested interest in hoping that it moves somewhat lower, or even sharply lower, because the lower gold goes, the more attractive it will then become on a medium to longer term basis, and possibly on a short term basis as well. So it's certainly interesting, and I would keep watching it. Now, what about some of the longer-term, medium-to-longer-term prospects, and let's start with stock markets. I feel that we're in the latter stages of this so-called valuation contraction cycle, which really started in 1999-2000. I describe it as a secular bear market, as many people do, and I did at the beginning of the cycle, but I feel that it's more accurate, really, to, although it certainly has bear markets, these valuation and contraction cycles, and we've seen two very big ones in 2000 and 2008, but I feel that since it's the old situation of trading beneath a glass ceiling with some bungee jumps at the downside, that it's more accurate to describe it as a valuation contraction cycle, and that's what we were seeing really until the latter part of last year. I think when a reaction on Wall Street bottomed in November of 2012, so exactly a year ago. Valuations were definitely down and really quite attractive, but we've had, with the help of QE, for sure, a stunning big rally this year, which still has consistency and momentum on Wall Street. So there's not a shred of evidence in terms of what Wall Street's doing that this move is over, but what it has done is lift valuations quite considerably. Now, this is not a bubble. It would be way premature to call it a bubble, and I'm certainly not doing that. But in the Wall Street vernacular, it is certainly a sugar high. And I think the Fed is concerned about this, or I'll put it this way, I certainly hope that the Fed is somewhat concerned about this. And I suspect they are, because we're getting a lot of open-air commentary, or certainly a lot of commentary that is intended for the public as the Fed discusses various ways in which it can deal with some unwinding of QE without driving up interest rates, because they certainly took fright in that May to September period when they saw a rise of over 100, about 110 points in the interest rate for the U.S. 10-year Treasury yield. So they're airing various policies, and one of them is that they could taper the QE that they now have, but concentrate on buying short-term Treasury instruments to keep those rates lower. And again, what is perhaps commendable is that we certainly can't accuse the Fed of too much secrecy. And I think one of the reasons that they are airing views here is just to test it, see how the markets actually react, how commentators actually react. So it's probably a responsible policy on the part of the Fed. And they're as aware as you and I are that these policies have not been dealt with before, and how we actually get out of the QE without disturbing markets, or how we continue with it without, if that's what they decide to do, without creating destabilizing problems across the economy. It's really worth thinking about all this. I am in the camp, by the way, and I think you know this, that I think that Ben Bernanke's been basically right. And if he hadn't done what he's done, if he hadn't brought in the QE, then I think we would have had a very, very destabilizing crash, much worse than what we actually saw in 2008. And I think the social consequences of that could have been potentially quite horrific. So we will never know, of course, because he did what he did. We see the evidence. But the tricky part all along has been, how do they end this? Now, they would like to end it because the U.S. economy is recovering more quickly. But we know that that's not happened, and it's hardly surprising that that hasn't happened, because good economic historians have told us for a long time that following a credit crisis recession, it takes at least 5 to 7 years before you get back to anything like normal. And I think it takes a bit longer than that in this situation. And where are we? Four and three quarter years? I think, well, if you take it from from the first quarter, the end of the first quarter in 2009, I think that would be about right. So it's going to take longer. It wouldn't be at all surprising if we saw the global economy in this somewhat slow environment for a good while longer. Now, the flip side of that coin, though, is that it's been an extremely good environment for large corporations. And, of course, I'm thinking now of the corporate autonomies, which Owen reviews so thoroughly, and including in here today. And that's a sector that I could talk about all night. It's not a sector, actually. It's a categorization which refers to these big multinational companies which are clear leaders within their industries, and they've outgrown their domestic economies and sell to clients all over the world. In many cases, they cover all of the various industry groups. The ones that have particularly excelled this year have been the ones that cater to the growing middle classes around the globe, and that's a big bull story, as you know. But not to digress here in terms of where we actually are in this cycle, to get back to that point and the subject of QE. I think the unwinding of the QE leads to several years of fairly choppy activity, and I think they will unwind it. Maybe they replace it with something else, but I don't think we're going to see the current policy continue here. And as I said earlier, I hope that they're concerned about stock market valuations and on Wall Street, and maybe they'll get lucky and some other factor will cause a reaction and lengthy consolidation phase. That would certainly not be terrifying for investors who are long today, although it might disappoint them if they're in the sugar high mood. But there is the real risk, though, that if they continue with QE, that Wall Street does go on and become a bubble. And that would be a much bigger concern, I think, overall, because then it would have almost certainly some economic consequences when the bubble bursts. And, of course, all bubbles do burst, and usually because central banks move in to choke them off. And that's not a situation that the Fed wants to see, and it's certainly not, in my opinion, it's certainly not a situation that I want to see here. So again, maybe they get lucky and we see a normal reaction and a good ranging consolidation. I think that would be good news. But right now, as I said earlier, there's no evidence that this Wall Street move is over. And the charts are rivetingly consistent, so it's a self-feeding move, helped by this, driven by this QE. And we need to keep an eye on it. I'm certainly not saying bail out of things. I haven't said that at all. I haven't put any of my equity positions up for sale. I'm relieved to say. I have dallied in the S&P on a couple of occasions to a small-time misfortune, because they've kept going up. I've dallied with hedge shorts in there, and I still have one, but it is a very small position, and it is, as a hedge position. I haven't managed it actively enough, because I've had opportunities to come out with a modest profit and haven't done so. But that's my problem, and it's also a digression here. I think the probability is that we get, as I've said before in these broadcasts, that we get several years of ranging activity and probably choppy action and a bit of a pullback from whatever high we get here on Wall Street. That's hardly something to keep us awake at night in the stuff of nightmares category. I don't think it's anything like that. I'm not expecting another bear market on Wall Street anytime soon, or if we do, it'll be one of those cyclical rather than secular bear markets. And I'm not happy with the definition of a 20% decline as a bear market, but it's sort of generally accepted in the marketplace. Could we see that over the next few years? Certainly. And I would be surprised, actually, if we didn't. But that's not something to panic about. And particularly if you are not leveraged here, and also if you're holding a number of quality companies, such as the autonomies. They can be volatile, but their long-term potential is considerable and will remain considerable. Now, looking beyond this, we feel, I've often said, will have heard me say this, that I think that following that period of, I think, a few more years of ranging activity, that we will see evidence that a new secular bull market is underway. Now, the background factors that contribute to that are always different from one cycle to another, as I've often said and written. But again, for the U.S., and I think the U.S. will be a big player in that secular bull market cycle, or one of the leaders among developed markets. The entrepreneurial U.S. economy is much in evidence, and while the growth rate is slow and the employment figures are poor, but for corporations are doing exceptionally well, and they continue to do so. They've paid down all these big autonomies. They've paid down any expensive long-term debt that they've had. They're primary beneficiaries of these low interest rates. They've even borrowed somewhat to buy back shares. That raises an eyebrow or two, but I can understand why. It does flatter earnings, and that's what the market is, or many market commentators are looking for. They don't care why the earnings are going up as long as they're going up. But by buying in shares, their costs, and that means they can also raise dividends without increasing their costs. And of course, the corporate management teams benefit substantially from that procedure. But the big drivers for the next secular bull market will be the accelerated rate of technological innovation. It really is accelerating, and there's no end in sight to that. It will end, of course, at some stage, but it'll probably be some draconian development, hopefully very, very, very much in the future, because this is a tribute to human ingenuity and its gathering pace, and that is phenomenally bullish for corporations, as I've talked so often on this subject. Now, the other big driver is that Wall Street, again, one of its technological innovations, the fracking. And so the U.S. has incredibly competitive energy prices among developed economies. And that's certainly going to continue. Most other economies have the capability, they have the potential to lower their energy costs, but lots of them are moving in the wrong direction, particularly Europe, which doesn't want to have anything to do with fracking, or most of Europe doesn't right now. And then they've also gone overboard on some of these premature renewables, which have driven up costs enormously. And I rue that development here in the UK, because our energy costs have certainly gone up enormously with this wind farm business. But I digress here. Low energy countries that do have low energy costs will be prime movers in the secular bull market. And I think a few years from now, a good many more of them will be fracking within their own countries, and therefore I feel that we will see energy prices somewhat lower in real terms, inflation adjusted terms, in other words. And then the actual existence of those economies is a very bullish factor in terms of corporate profits overall. So the basic difference here is that countries have big problems, including high levels of unemployment, and that's because an awful lot of jobs, it's not just the recession, but an awful lot of jobs are being replaced by smart machines, and that's not something that's going to go away. That is a significant problem, but you can understand why the corporations do this. And if they can have a smart machine and don't have to worry about, well, I'm digressing and short on time, so I won't follow on that theme. But we're in the era. Here's the important point. We are in the era where corporations are becoming steadily more powerful. And a lot of these autonomies are wealthier than a number of the world's smaller and less developed countries. And this trend is actually going to continue. Now, I think it's a terrific development. It's certainly a terrific development for investors. I think we'll have far more companies that are in business for themselves and their shareholders, but I think there's a tendency for more of them to be publicly spirited and to be making positive contributions to the global economy and the communities that we live in. I think there are far more, I'll put it this way, that there are far more that are in that category than the next, say, generation of Enrons, which were very destructive. And in contrast to this increased corporate power, we have somewhat dysfunctional and struggling governments, and also dealing with that big social problem of unemployment. Okay, what else? Global bonds, bear market, slowly developing here. That's can only be the case. You end a secular bull market, and I'm pretty convinced it did end last year, over 31 years, and then we're in a bear market. I don't think that we're going to go all the way back to some of the rates that we saw in the 1980s, but you know, take that U.S. 10-year Treasury at 2.75 here today. Will we see that go above 3? Of course we will. Will we see it go above 4? Certainly think so. Probably at some point in 2014, or certainly 2015, if not sooner. And, you know, 6, 7, 8%, depending on how strong growth is, how much inflation develops over the next few decades. So they will move higher. I don't think that's a disaster here, but when they start to push higher over a persistent period, that will worry investors generally. I would not want to be in those long-dated government bond markets, and I think we should keep a close eye on them overall. Commodities, I think that we've certainly benefited from the lower food prices, and I hope that continues for a while. What about the investment metals, the precious metals? I'm hoping they come lower. And technically, there's some evidence that that could easily happen. If that doesn't happen, then we're still in a support building phase. In other words, if we get upward dynamics near today's levels, so reaffirm the lows that we saw several months ago, then that could that would indicate that support was being built in a trading range. But the more interesting situation will be if they move lower first. In terms of currencies, I don't think we'll see an enormous amount of volatility, at least in terms of the majors. No country wants a strong currency, but some can actually deal with it more readily than others. And on that note, folks, I think I should say thank you for your attention. Have a fabulous weekend. All the very best to all of you.